I am Pierre Lumumba here at the Swara Acacia Conservancy in Machakos County in the Republic of Kenya. You know, Africa, as Pliny the Elder once said, out of her, always something new. And to the extent that African countries regained their independence in the late 50s and 60s, their economies were traditionally dependent on Western institutions. It was either Europe or the United States of America, through institutions which were dominated by the West, ordinarily referred to as the Bretton Woods institutions, created in Bretton Woods in the 1940s after the Second World War. And the major institutions that emerged out of that space were the International Monetary Fund and the Bank for Development, ordinarily referred to as the World Bank. Many people do not know, but what is now called the World Trade Organization was also mooted at that time. But of course, what we know is the General Agreement on Tariffs, or GATT. These institutions were dominated, created, and are still dominated by the West. And that is why, therefore, when BRICS became an idea, and it must be said that the idea was from a conversation by another Westerner, Goldman Sachs, who came for the first time and talked about emerging economies, particularly the economist O'Neill, who talked about BRICS to mean Brazil, Russia, India, and China. Between 2000, the year 2001 and 2009, there were many activities, with the first major meeting taking place in the year 2009, and of course in the year 2010 and 2011, South Africa was admitted, and it was no longer BRIC but BRICS. And let us ask ourselves, what was the reason behind the suggestion that there should be an economic bloc or economic body known as the BRICS? The reason must be understood in the context of history. In the context of history, to mean that many African countries were dominated by Western institutions, so that you had agreements such as the Lomé Convention, which was between African countries and the European Union. Outside of the Lomé Convention, you had conventions such as the Cotonou Convention. And aside from that, we also saw that the IMF and the World Bank were very dominant in African countries, particularly during the 1980s, under what was then referred to as the Structural Adjustment. During the Structural Adjustment, IMF and the World Bank came to the African economies, and what they did was to make economic prescriptions from which African countries have never recovered. It is when economies which are not in the first world, so to speak, started to emerge as manufacturing economies, they started to emerge as major economies, that it became sensible to begin to talk about these emerging economies as a counterweight to the IMF and the World Bank. Brazil was beginning to emerge as an economy which was industrializing, even making jets. India was beginning to emerge as being very dominant in the world of technology, in the world of computing. China was also emerging as a manufacturing hub. Russia, of course, had been a hub both because of its military capability, among other things, and also its ability to leverage on technology. So those were the natural stones upon which the new economic order would rest. But Africa was being excluded. And because Africa was being excluded, the question then arose, how do you involve Africa? And when South Africa, which was the dominant economy at that time, said that they were interested in this arrangement, they were then admitted. Of course, there was then the question at that time whether you wanted to admit Nigeria, but Nigeria's economy was not as sophisticated as South Africa's economy. Some even talked about the admission of Egypt at that time. But in those early days, as we know, it is South Africa that was admitted, and we now talk of BRICS. The question then is, what is the value, if any, of BRICS to the continent of Africa? I hold the view that BRICS provides a great opportunity for African countries to look at their economies from a different standpoint. Many African economies are still agrarian, if I'm permitted to use that word. You want to look at economies that are going to make Africa go through what I call the latter-day agricultural agrarian revolution. India can provide that technology. Russia can provide that technology through their fertilizer schemes. China can provide that. Brazil can do that. If you go into the fishing sector, China can do that. Brazil can do that. In other words, these are countries that have appropriate technology which can be deployed in the continent of Africa. If you leave the agriculture sector, in the energy sector, right now, if you look at a country like China, it generates more electricity than all African countries combined. We need that technology in order to improve our hydroelectricity generation, geothermal. We need to have solar, we need to have wind, and it's not lost on me that China is indeed the home of most of these solar panels. We need that. We need also to have our infrastructure. And once again, these are countries that have the know-how, because in the recent past, they have succeeded in ensuring that their economies are lifted from poverty. We don't talk about this as often as we should, but in the last 30 years, China has been able to lift no less than 800 million of their population outside of poverty. We also need, as I've said, to get into the space of industrialization. And when you talk about industrialization, it's not lost on me that right now the Russians are in negotiations with the Nigerians for purposes of deploying nuclear technology. And nuclear technology is going to be very useful when we need reliable power. They are also in negotiations, or about to get into negotiations, with Burkina Faso and Mali for nuclear technology. And I think that that is very significant. The Russians are also going to be in negotiation, as they have already stated in Sochi, to transfer the necessary technology. The other thing is in the area of currency domination. We all know what happened in 1972. I remember as a young man, there was at that time the foreign minister or the foreign secretary of the United States, Henry Kissinger, and there was a Saudi oil minister called Sheikh Zaki Yamani. And at that time, that is when the economy of the world was dollarized. And through the dollarization of the international economy, the whole idea of the petrodollar came about. As I speak to you now, and my figures may very well be conservative, almost 80%, something between 70 to 80% of international trade is terminated in the United States dollar. In other words, I'm in Nairobi, Kenya, and I use a Visa card or American Express, it is expressed in dollar terms. In other words, the banking system internationally is controlled by the West. It is SWIFT. SWIFT may be registered in Belgium, but if I'm transferring money from Accra in Ghana to Lagos in Nigeria, it must go through a corresponding bank in New York before it comes back. That is how dominant the international monetary system is, courtesy of the West. And if you are not dealing with SWIFT, you are dealing with IBAN. And if you are not dealing the soft currency, the hard currencies in the world, you are talking dollar, you are talking euro, you are talking about the sterling pound. And as somebody said, when the American dollar sneezes, African currencies go into a coma. The BRICS, in my view, are now saying that we've got to have a payment system that is going to de-dollarize our economies so that our economies are not dependent on the United States dollars. And in fact, we do know as a fact that almost anything between 40 to 50% of the United States dollars is circulating outside of the United States of America. BRICS does provide an opportunity for countries within the continent of Africa to trade using their currencies. And I know, for example, that India and Tanzania have already tried to trade in the rupee. I know Zambia also tried to trade in the yuan. But the whole idea is that you'll have a basket of currencies, and in that way, we'll de-dollarize our economies. And when we de-dollarize our economies, it means that we are going to be much more in control of our affairs, in control of inflation and all those other things that are necessary if our economies are to grow for the benefit of the people. But what are the challenges going forward? Already, the Americans are jittery. They are jittery because the BRICS is expanding. Today, the BRICS countries combined have larger economy than Western Europe combined. As at this year, the BRICS economies control 36% of the world economy, and the Western countries control only 27%. And that is increasing, because many African countries are now saying we want to join BRICS, and countries such as Nigeria and others, even in the Arab world, are joining the BRICS. And if the Western world is not very careful, then BRICS is the next big thing in town, even if it does not look like it now. But what are the headwinds? The Western world is already resisting. They're already saying we are going to sanction you. So the weapon of choice is sanctions. They're already going to say that we are going to impose tariff and non-tariff barriers on your goods. They're already saying that we are going to ensure that we deny you access to credit through institutions such as the IMF and the World Bank. Another thing that they are doing is that many Western countries are now acquiring interests in African Development Bank. And it is not lost on me that after Nigeria, the second largest shareholder in the African Development Bank is the United States of America. The Germans are there, the Japanese are there, the British are there, the French are there. And as I've said at a different forum, the African Development Bank is in danger of being an African bank by name only, because it is fundamentally controlled by those shareholders. So this is not going to be easy. There's going to be divide and rule. And I suspect that a number of African countries are going to be told, we are prepared to forgive you your debts if you don't join the BRICS. But I hold the view, when I put the scale, that BRICS, if we remain faithful to its agenda, provides African countries with an opportunity to participate in an economic order which they understand and which they participate in from a standpoint of respect and as full chartered members, as opposed to institutions such as the IMF and the World Bank, which were created when African countries were still under the colonial yoke. BRICS is the way to go, and I hope and pray that it will succeed. Difficulties will exist, but those difficulties can be converted into opportunities. Africa is always attractive, and that is why we continue to discuss her and the activities around her. But we must say our goodbye to come back again to continue the conversation.